and you run through your cash reserves in about, you know, 3, 6, 12 months. And you go to the bank and you say, hey, I'm in a hard spot here, but I've been making all of these early payments for all these years. You mind if I just coast for a few months? Then you know what they're going to say? Absolutely not.
And if you really want to take it graduate level and put your emotional part of this to the side, take the earnings from the interest that you earn and keep reinvesting in that thing that's paying that higher interest rate, right? Absolutely. That's kind of the best thing that you can do.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. I'm Tate Duryea, and I'm here with my co-host, Ryan Gibson. What's up, man? How you doing?
Good. I'm excited to do this one-on-one episode with you and talk about interest rate.
Yeah, this is the first time that we're doing a one-on-one, and we're going to be doing this new thing where every other Thursday, it's just going to be Ryan and I talking about all sorts of things, investing, finance, real estate. And today we want to talk about interest rates, interest rate arbitrage, which we'll get into, debt, and why you maybe shouldn't pay off your mortgage. So in order to tee all of that up, we want to first sort of figure out how we got here, how we're in this higher interest rate environment. So Ryan, you want to take us through a quick history of the last decade, two decades, and how we ended up where we are today with interest rates?
You know, all things considered, where we are today, it's really shown how resistant the economy really is. Because if you think about it, in the last 2 years, we've had a war with Russia and Ukraine. We've had China turn off its supply. We've had a global pandemic. We've had supply chain disruptions and just record inflation. So we all know these things have happened. But if you rewind back to when the Fed hadn't raised interest, this is late 2021, interest rates were near 0% or at 0%. The overnight cost of borrowing for banks, that's the federal funds rate, was about 0%. And that was driving up costs. This is late 2021, early 2022. And the Fed basically said, we want to raise interest rate to tame inflation. And when they made this announcement in late 2021, early 2022, they started increasing the federal funds rate, which increased the costs of banks to lend out money, which basically meant you knew your interest rates were going up. And everybody wondered by how much. And the reality is all the smart financial groups predicted 1 to 1.5% increases in the federal funds rate, which wasn't going to be terrible, but also, you know, we knew that interest rates are going to go up. Well, what happened was in 2022, the Fed actually raised the rates about 4.5 to 5% in early 2023. So the money, the interest rates, the overnight cost of borrowing for lenders substantially increased more than we ever had expected. Right. And, you know, the analogy that I heard the other day at a conference that I thought was really funny by a big institutional shop was, it was like Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Fed, was taking a shower one morning and the water was 100% cold, right? And he was like, oh my God, it's cold. I have to crank the water up full hot. And now it's like steaming hot. And now he's got to like put a little bit more cold back into it and then a little bit hot back into it. And so he's been throttling interest rates up to tame inflation. And the big mystery right now is how long will he have to keep doing that? Or how long will the Fed continuing rising interest rates to sort of soft land the economy? And so the question is on every investor's mind is the economy going to have a soft landing, meaning that we're going to get this inflation under control and we're going to sort of soft land this? Is it going to be a hard bounce, or is there going to be no landing at all and we're never really going to see a recession and we're going to kind of just keep driving on? So I think it's important to understand how we got here, supply chain, COVID, war in Russia and Ukraine, rising interest rates, and now where we are and where we're headed.
Right. And it was kind of a perfect storm, just to recap, to create this inflation. I mean, the Fed injected $5 trillion into the economy during COVID. It was all the quantitative easing during the Great Recession was what, $1.8 trillion, somewhere in that neighborhood. And then overnight, and that was over the course of years, overnight during COVID, I mean, they pumped $5 trillion in. And supply dropped dramatically because there was, you know, manufacturing and supply chain issues. And so now you've got all this money working its way through the economy. And so it's kind of this perfect storm that, of course, I mean, anybody could see it coming. The economy was going to overheat. All that money is going into assets and, you know, real estate and stocks and everything's going up. The Fed can't help supply. They can only throw cold water on demand, which is what they're doing with interest rates there. So, okay, here we are in this high interest rate environment. How do we win in this, right? So it costs more to borrow because interest rates are high. It also means that you get more money when you put your money into a high yield savings account, right? So Ryan, you were talking about CDs or certificate of deposits, which are about as safe of a instrument as you can get by going to the bank and putting, you know, locking your money up for a certain period of time and getting a rate of return on it. If you're sitting in a 0% interest checking account, what would you say to those people? Come on, man.
I would be really upset that if anybody has any savings sitting in an account that's not earning at least 2 or 3% interest, you need to change what you're doing like right away. I mean, if you have $1 million, $100,000, I mean, you can add this up. I mean, that's, you know, anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000 to $20,000 to $30,000 a year that you're just missing out on. So, and this isn't like a lot of work. This isn't like a huge lift. I mean, literally it could be just calling your local branch manager and saying, I want to be in a high yield savings, and they will offer that. Banks right now want your deposits more than they ever have before, because a bank can't lend money out if they don't have deposits. And all the news about SVB and all that, they want your money in their bank and they're willing to pay you to have it there. Right. And so the interest rates go up in your high yield savings account when the banks, you know, the cost of funds to lend goes up. So it bottom line is call your bank. I bank with JP Morgan, and I called up JP Morgan Chase, and we have our money into a high yield savings now. It was just a phone call away. They're not going to call you and say, oh, by the way, Mr. you know, Gibson, you know, your money isn't making the best money it can make.
Right.
You're going to have to do that work. And it might just be a phone call or two to get your money working much harder for you.
Yeah. Personally, I run pretty cash lean because, I have a certain amount of reserves, but as soon as I have cash that builds up in my account, it gets invested in primarily real estate. But I have an Ally savings account. I think it's paying 3.75% right now. So not bad.
Not bad. Yeah. And I shot low at 2 to 3%. I mean, you can get as high as 5% right now in a savings account. So please take advantage of it. If you're down on the economy or whatever, still, it doesn't matter. You don't have to invest this money in a market or in a stock. Yep. There's no risk to this capital. As long as you got another $250,000 FDIC insured limit, you can make money right now. So go do it.
Exactly. Completely liquid. Important to note, because there's also CDs. We wanted to talk about the long-term versus short-term CD rates that you can find at banks. That is not liquid. You can't just pull it out at any moment, right? So you want to talk quickly about the difference between one-year, three-year, five-year CDs?
Okay, this is what's incredible. So I remember when I was first getting started as a pilot, you know, I tied my cash up in a CD before I really got into investing. And I remember I'd go to a bank and maybe I'd get like 1% or something like that for a 2 or 3 year CD. I don't remember exactly what it was, but the bank would basically say, Ryan, if you tie your money up for longer, we're going to give you a better interest rate.
Right.
And then on the flip side, they say, hey, if you want a short-term CD, like a 3 to 5 month CD, we're going to give you even less than that, because when your money is tied up longer, you're going to get rewarded. When your money is tied up shorter, you're going to get less rewarded. And that's kind of how the market works.
And that's how it normally works.
That's how it normally works. Big, big difference. Now, when you walk into your bank right now today, as we're recording this, your bank's going to say the opposite they're going to say, we're going to pay you a ton for short-term money and a lot less for long-term money.
Right.
And we want to dive into that as to why. We want you to understand why that's happening, but we also want you to go to your bank today and take advantage of it. Again, right. Go get that CD and get your money working, because you can go get 4 or 5% right now in a CD or in a high-yield savings. So there's a lot of really good options out there. But the longer you tie up your money in that CD, it's actually going to pay you less, which is nonsensical. So we're going to unpack that right now.
And this, this is what it means when people say the yield curve is inverted, right? And they're referring to treasury bonds, but the same thing is showing itself in the CD market. Important to note that CDs are not liquid. So if you want access to that money in 3 to 6 months, you know, maybe not the best idea. But if you know that you've got that cash savings, that you do not want to invest it in something that's higher risk, it's a great option. Anything exactly. more to add on CDs?
Yeah. So like right now, I'm looking at a CD. I'm going to chase.com/personal/savings/bank-CD. And I see that a 3-month CD pays 3.5%. This is like as retail as you get. When you look at the CDs for a, let's go to 36 months, it pays 2%.
Look at that.
So the longer,
and you probably find better rates through credit union, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. These are probably the minimum that you would come to expect on a CD rate. I'm sure if you go to Wings right. Financial or what your local credit union, I'm sure there's going to be much better rates. A 60 month CD.
I know for a fact. I'll go ahead.
Yeah. 1.5%. So you can see this right now, like, you know, you can go anywhere from 3.75 all the way down to 1.5. So basically the short-term money is getting rewarded and the long-term money is getting disincentivized, which is very interesting.
It almost looks like, you know, the banks are hedging the fact that interest rates may come down and they don't want to lock themselves into paying a higher rate for a longer term if rates are going to come back down in a couple of years. So that's good for the real estate market. I want to pivot to the idea of interest arbitrage here, because this is something that I hear all the time is, man, I'm almost done paying off my house. And I'm just going, wait, why would you be paying off your house? I mean, now granted, Ryan, we were talking before the show and you were saying that your wife read a book and you read it as well, just to see the other side of this. This is sort of the Dave Ramsey thing is, you know, if you have cash sitting around and you have nothing else to do with it, sure, you know, pay down that note. But the flip side of that is I say, okay, what is your mortgage rate? And somebody might say 3%. Like, well, do you think that over the long term, you can earn more than 3% on that money? And usually the answer is yes. You know, the long-term rate of S&P 500 return is 7%, right? So simple math tells you that you're 4% better by taking that money and just throwing the S&P for a really long time than paying down your mortgage. But there's also the factor of inflation. So Ryan, what's inflation running today?
I think it's about 5.5%.
Sounds about right. Yeah, it's come down slightly from its peak.
Between 5 and 5.5, yeah.
Right. And I think most people agree that the real inflation rate is higher. But if you just look at CPI, well, if inflation is at 5.5% and your interest rate on your mortgage is 3, then what is your inflation adjusted or your real interest rate? Well, it's negative 2.5%. The bank is paying you because you're paying those mortgage payments are being paid in future years with cheaper and cheaper dollars. Hey, what are airline rates doing? What's your pay rate doing right now? Is it more next year than it is what you're making this year? I bet it is. It is for my company. So why wouldn't I use my higher pay rate in future years? That mortgage payment is going to be a much smaller percentage of my overall income in future years than it is this year.
Exactly.
Thoughts?
No, the simple fact is this: 3% versus 5% or 6%. If you know you can get a higher interest rate somewhere else, you should go put your money in the thing that's going to pay you more. So if you're in a mortgage that's 3%, and you can get something that guarantees you 6 or 7 or 8%. I understand nothing's a guarantee, but a safe treasury yield is paying 5% right now or 4% right now, like we just talked about. You know, go
or
find
even
a great
high yield savings account at 3.75, right? I mean, you're getting less than 1%, but you're getting some positive interest arbitrage there.
Exactly. And, you know, and I want to speak to psychology and paying off your house. I want to recognize that it feels good that the shelter over your head for your family is paid off. And as a provider for your family, maybe you're single income, maybe you're dual income, whatever it is, maybe you and your spouse are focused on paying down a house, and that's going to make you feel good because it's a debt obligation that you no longer have, right? You have good debts and bad debts. And obviously that would probably fall in the category of bad debt that you want to pay off, right? And there's a lot of pride in paying and saying your house is paid off. It's really, really rewarding. When you put your investor hat on, you've got to put all that emotional psychology to the side for a minute and just ask yourself, what's paying you more? An investment that is paying you 7 or 8% interest, or paying off a note that is 3% interest or 4% interest? And factually, mathematically, the investment that's paying a higher interest is going to be the better place to put your cash. Now, psychologically, you might feel better about paying down your debt, and that's okay. So I just wanted to throw a word out
Absolutely.
There for those that are on this mission. But here's some thoughts. Let's say you have $100,000 or $50,000, whatever it is coming to you this year, and you say, I want to take that $100,000, I want to pay down my mortgage. Why not do this? Why not invest it in something that's paying a higher interest and use the excess cash from that investment money to pay down your mortgage? So now you're feeling good, right, about paying down your mortgage faster, and you're making a better interest rate, thereby making more money. Your dollars are working harder for you now. And if you really want to take it graduate level and put your emotional part of this to the side, take the earnings from the interest that you earn and keep reinvesting in that thing that's paying that higher interest rate, right?
Absolutely.
That's kind of the best thing that you can do. So when you're thinking about paying off your house, sure, if you have nowhere better to put your money, and what Tate really means, I mean, that's the first thing Tate said, if you have nowhere else to put your money, then fine, pay your house off.
Sure.
But what he means is, what he really means to say is, if you can't find something that pays a higher interest rate than your home mortgage, then pay your house
which
off.
Which is likely, right. But
right.
Which is likely at 3%, which because I mean, the majority of Americans refinanced in the last, 3 years, something like that. It's an amazing statistic. The majority of Americans have sub 3.5% mortgages now. So it's pretty hard to make the argument that I can't find something that pays more than 3.5%, which is just the point we're making. The other thing that I like to bring up is, you know, you said, you know, it feels good, it feels safe. Well, let me pose a question to you, Ryan. If you have $1 million mortgage, to say a $1.4 million house somewhere in that neighborhood, and it's a 30-year note, $1 million, and you pay double every month, and you get that mortgage note all the way down to 200K, and you've been taking all your excess savings, you've been pouring it into this mortgage note, you've got $200,000 balance left, and something goes wrong, you lose your medical, you lose your ability to earn, and you run through your cash reserves in about, you know, 3, 6, 12 months, and you go to the bank and you say, hey, I'm in a hard spot here, but I've been making all of these early payments for all these years. You mind if I just coast for a few months? Then you know what they're going to say? Absolutely not.
Exactly.
That next payment is due just like it was, and in 90 days, you're past due, and after that, we're foreclosing. So what's really safer? It's like having pay the minimum on low interest debt that is you know, an asset to you, and have cash savings and cash investments over here that then you could sell during a hard time to cover mortgage debt, or is it plowing money into, you know, a low interest mortgage just to say that you're debt free?
Exactly. It's a feel good trophy. Good for you.
Right.
And again, this isn't a knock on people that are savvy and have you know, positioned themselves for success. It just doesn't make any investor sense. in most situations, right? And so again, I'm going to go back to your first statement, Tate. If you don't have anything else better to do with your money, so I'm going to add another layer to that, right? Which is, you don't have anywhere else to invest at a higher interest rate than your current mortgage, and you have so much cash in the bank, you literally have your emergency fund funded for retirement. Like, you can go all the way to 90 years old, right? You have that much cash that you could lose your job and you could continue to making mortgage payments. Because you make an excellent point, which is, you can't make a mortgage payment if you don't have the cash reserves to do that. Guess what? They're going to take away your house. You're going to go into foreclosure. And even though you did the right thing in your mind, you did the right thing, you paid down that mortgage, you have a low balance, you have really good LTV, whatever, they don't care. They're going to take it all back from you. Or maybe you go and borrow to take more out, but now you're taking it out at a higher interest rate. So now you're kind of penalizing yourself, missing out on a higher yield opportunity. Now you've paid down your mortgage.
And what Ryan's saying is, you know, you paid down that 3%, and then you want to re-leverage, you want to take that debt back out, but now interest rates are high. And so you do a HELOC and it's at 6% when you could have just, you know, not paid it down in the first place. Is that what you're saying there?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Really great way of saying it, Tate. And so it's just, there's just, if you're thinking about paying off your mortgage, write us an email. Let us help you kind of think through this process of, you know, does this make the most sense? And, you know, everybody's got a different situation. You know, we're not financial advisors. We're not giving you financial advice. This is just how we structure our lives. And the conversation, the real conversations that we're having with our spouses and other people that are in the industry and you know, other thoughts that we've had on this. So these are just our thoughts. You know, obviously do your own due diligence.
I also want to touch on toys, because pilots love toys. And one of the things that I took it upon myself to do in my career was, I promised myself that I wouldn't buy toys with earned income, because you can do the same thing as you're talking about, investing in things that pay cash flow. And you can take that cash flow and you can pay down your mortgage, you can reinvest it, or you can buy toys with it, right? So I promised myself that I wasn't going to buy a nice car until my real estate could pay for it. I promised myself I wasn't going to buy a boat, and I still haven't. But when I have the cash flow to buy an airplane or a boat, it's going to come from my investments, not from my earned income. So instead of taking $100,000 and going buying a Porsche with it, you could instead take that $100,000, invest it in something that's cash flowing 4 or 5%. Well, that's $4,000 or $5,000 a year. You might need double the cost of the Porsche, but you're not actually going to be working for it, right? And I would recommend, at least in my personal opinion, not to pay cash for the Porsche. Put the down payment, take the loan. Usually auto loans come, the dealerships have awesome financing deals that are sub, you know, the going interest rates, because they want to put you in that vehicle. And you can use that interest arbitrage where your cash is earning a great interest rate, or if it's real estate, you're clipping a nice cash coupon over here, and that cash is just going right to service that debt.
Well, let me break this down a different way. Let's say you have $50,000. You want to buy a $50,000 car. I don't care what it is. Yep. You want to buy a $50,000 car. So you run out and you buy that toy, right? Could be an off-roading vehicle, could be whatever it is. Instead of buying the car or the vehicle, go take 50 grand, invest it in something that pays 8%. That means that every month you're going to get $333. You can take that $333 and pay your note on your car. And your note on your car or your toy is going to be probably less than 5%, which means your investment's paying for your car. You're no longer even working for your car, and you're leveraging smartly, and you're still coming out ahead at the end of the day with the interest that you're making on your investment. So this is the concept of paying yourself first. When you hear this, like, pay yourself first, that's what it means. When you take investing, you take the cash flow from the investment and then you buy the toy. Let me tie this into what I offer my investors.
Yeah, this is a great, great product. This is, you know, if you're not on Spartan's list, get on Spartan's list. Turbine does not have a debt pool as of yet. We may sometime in the future. Ryan, I've invested in your debt fund. It's a fantastic product. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, where can you go make 9% interest? You can make 9% interest with Spartan. and in my deal. So what you can do is you can actually lend money to real estate, so to hard assets like self-storage. You can get a lien against those assets. You can get a promissory note that promises to pay you back for those assets. That's backed by a real business, and you get 9%. So doing the math here, I want to
pause you here because it sounds too good to be true, right? It's like, okay, 9%. Why would you be paying 9%? And I also want to understand that they are acting as the bank, right? So the bank is the most preferential money that is going to purchase real estate, and they are the ones who are, that money is secured by the real estate. So unlike equity, where you're taking risk and you're going to be wiped out if the property forecloses, if you're the debt, you are the one who's foreclosing. So you're protected. So we can dive into that. But anyway, why would you be paying 9%, Ryan?
9%. So right now the bank is paying pretty close to 8% or charging us 8% or 7% for some of our investments. We'd rather that money go to our investors. So if you're thinking about, let's take the Porsche, for example. I love that example. Let's say it's $100,000. I don't know what it is. But instead of going and buying the Porsche, go invest in the debt, right? So go invest in a Spartan deal. $100,000 is going to pay you $9,000 a year, which in cash flow, divide that by 12, that's $750 a month. So now you could go take a loan on the Porsche at 5% or 4%. It makes you want to go buy a Porsche. That's going to be $500 to $600 payment, and you're making $750 from the debt fund that basically makes your Porsche payment. So this is how you can still buy your toys, but have your money pay for it. Right. So, I really like the debt fund. I personally invest in the debt fund, and my wife loves it because the cash just shows up every month. There's no up and down. It's a promise to pay. It's the closest thing to a guaranteed payment. Nothing is guaranteed in this world. I don't care who you are, who backs it. Nothing's guaranteed, but it is the highest paid person in the capital stack. So when, like you said, Tate, when it comes to equity and debt, your debt is paid first, and our debt fund pays 9%. And what's great is after 2 years, you have a redemption option. And we're going to talk about what that means. It basically means that you can call the capital back and make 9%. And earlier in this call, we talked about how CDs...
And this is not liquid, right? Yeah,
correct. No, I was going to say like CDs, right now I just looked up on Chase, a CD that's, I think it was 48 months or 60 months, pays you 1.5%, right? And again, like what Tate was saying, not exactly liquid. So banks are betting on interest rates going down, right? They're basically saying, we're predicting that interest rates over the long haul are going to go down. So for that long-term money, we're no longer paying you that long-term higher premium because there's an inversion in the yield curve right now. That's what all that stuff means. It means that normally investors get rewarded for holding their money long in treasuries. Now they're getting rewarded for holding their money short because the yield curve is inverted and now interest rates long-term are paid less. So what's cool about our debt fund is long-term money is making a great 9% interest rate.
So you're saying it's locked up for 2 years, and then after that, there's a redemption?
Correct.
Hey, can you explain what a redemption is?
Yeah, redemption is basically meaning that you can say, hey, I'd like to be paid my money back. And whenever there's a redemption in a deal, it's always really important to understand the caveats to a redemption. And my debt fund is not any dissimilar than most debt funds and having caveats in the redemption period. So for example, we only fulfill redemptions twice a year. I think we do it once in February, once in August. And there's a 90-day notice requirement. And it's also really important to know that it may not be a guaranteed redemption. However, we put some safeguards in place for our investors. First and foremost, we say, if we can't redeem your cash, we no longer can make loans with our debt fund until all the redemptions have been satisfied. So that aligns us with your interest in getting your cash back.
Because you want to do your real estate deals.
Exactly. So we can't just say, we're not going to pay you back, but we're going to keep buying stuff with this debt fund, right? We have to pay you back before we can move on. So it's also in our best interest to fulfill as many redemption requests as possible. But you know, at the end of the day, if you're making 9%, you know, invest the money that you can stand to be parted with, right? And know that it's liquid, but just always not as liquid as maybe having it at a bank right. account, savings account. So,
and then I want to just touch on loan to value and so sort of what that capital stack looks like. So if you guys were buying a, just for simple math, $1 million property, you would need about how much in debt, and you would fund this with private debt from the debt pool?
Yeah. So we would take no more than $650,000 on $1 million property. So
that would be a 65% LTV or loan to value, which means that you have a 35% cushion of $1 million worth of real estate, insuring your $650,000 worth of debt, right?
That's correct.
And the remaining would be equity, which is equity gets to participate in the upside. When Ryan and his team make that property worth $2 million and they sell it, you don't participate in that as debt. The equity gets to participate in it. But if the property was to lose value for some reason and the deal was to go sideways, the debt would be secured by the real estate. So I just want to make that clear. Oh yeah, Ryan, and how do people find out more about the debt fund?
Yeah, so the debt fund opened recently. So if you want to invest in the debt fund before it fills up, you can just go to our website, spartan-investors.com, and you can register to get on our list. If you go to spartan-investors.com and you actually click on offerings, you can click on debt fund, and all of the information about the debt fund is on there. So you can kind of read up on it before you get in touch with us. But if that doesn't work out, I mean, you can always just email me at Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at spartan-investors.com. And just let me know if you want more information about it. We'll get you signed up.
Love it. And Ryan, I mean, you guys are, you know, the best self-storage operator that I've ever come across. We've done many, many deals with you. Highly encourage everybody to get on Ryan's list. If you're not already on the Turbine Capital list, please get on ours as well. We've got all sorts of deal flow across multiple different asset types. So yeah, check out that debt fund if you're interested in, you know, paying down your Porsche with, you know, easy money.
That's right.
All right, Ryan, you want to take us out?
All right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in, listening to how interest rates can impact your bottom line and what to do about it. We really had a lot of fun talking about how we got here, what to do about it, and kind of the way forward. So catch you on the next episode. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.